Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Ingrid Rüthig. Ingrid, those were beautiful poems we heard just before the break, but you're also a very fine visual artist and work in something called text works. What are text works and what attracted you to this medium?
Well, I'll come at it from the long way, I guess. I'd always practiced visual arts in high school, and I also love language. We had a fabulous English course there. But then I went into architecture, and I've discovered that those skills come together and they work in tandem. You use language and visual images. You know, on one level, you're communicating to clients, you're conveying to them, and maybe officials at the building department or something, the story of how the building will work. And then later you use both those tools to relay to contractors how you want the thing to come together, how it's all supposed to come together. There's also the sense that print language still surrounds us, even though we have all these digital things. Print language is still a huge part of the human world. And it fascinates me. So a few years ago, I wanted to see if I could take text beyond the page somehow to draw attention to the thing itself. And I also have a habit of collecting beautiful paper, like Japanese chiri tissue and Nepalese papers. So I thought, well, I could make use of those instead of just having them rolled up somewhere. So it all kind of came to a head.
One of my particular favorites in your text works series is your book Slipstream. And I know that that kind of grew right here in Northumberland when you were on retreat in Port Hope one time, and it was kind of a unique story. Can you share that with us?
Sure. The whole notion of text work, too, just to reiterate, was the idea of bringing text into visual art and drawing attention to that thing. So while I was on retreat, I hole up in a place in Port Hope sometimes here in Coburg as well, just to find a little solitude so I can write. But it takes a few days to get rid of all the junk in your head so that you can actually hear some good words coming through. And so I gave myself an exercise one day because I'd been there for a while and I thought, I'm not writing anything. I need to be doing something here. And so I thought, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do an exercise. I'll just make this up. And I decided every hour on the hour, for 18 hours, I was going to park myself in front of one of the windows that actually faced south towards the lake and the viaducts that run across the valley in Port Hope while they're endlessly traveled, traversed with freight trains. And I thought, I'm just going to sit here and I'll watch whatever is outside the window and I'll just record a whole page of stuff. Whatever I see, it's going on the page. And over time, over a lot of time, that all those pages of junk.
I don't think they were junk.
Well, yeah, a lot of it was junk. But yes, okay, the raw material, I distilled it. And I came up with 20 small poems, very small poems, but there was a cycle to it. So that was all right, but I thought, okay, now what am I going to do with it? And because it was such a vivid recording of images for me, I thought, okay, I'm going to take this into something visual. What can I do with it? So I came up with a text work I called Slipstream, which was a single page, but made as a piece of art that you could put on the wall. There were 20 in the series, and I have shown them. But then I was asked by Marilyn Cherry, who at the time was the curator at the Visual Arts Center of Clarington in Bowmanville, if I would be the first to do a series of artist books. I'd be the first artist to tackle that. So I thought, okay, now I can maybe take this whole thing, which was writing to begin with, then was a text work or visual piece of visual art, and what can I do with it and put it into a book form? So eventually I made 100 books by hand one summer and launched it at the gallery there. But it is both visual art and language put together.
Absolutely.
And it morphed a little bit again to become the book. Mm-hmm. And it seems to cycle around, but I find that each one of those things is a different exploration. You find something else in it when you take it and manipulate it a little bit.
Well, it is truly beautiful. I saw it in exhibition and in book form, and it's lovely. It really is. I was reading about you and a man called Douglas Glover, who's the publisher-editor of Numero 5 magazine, described you as a protean artist, a poet, fiction writer, editor, recovering architect, now dealing in architects, a hybrid artist, text artist, a hungry spirit who breaks forms and recombines them, who is always trying a little something new. So, can you tell us what new art project you're working on now?
Yes, a little bit anyway. I just always laugh when I hear or see Doug's intro. That was part of his introduction to an interview I'd done for Numero 5. And it always makes me smile because when I read the two words, hungry spirit, I thought, yes, that's it. He got it. Thank you. There's a name for somebody like me. But yes, I'm working on an extensive series of woven portraits of women creators and selected pages from their biographies. For me, it's an exploration of, like, a questioning, really, of what we assume to be factual about who these women were, or we don't know about them at all. Have they been swept under the carpet over the decades and the centuries? There are foremothers, if you will, that we don't know very much about, and a lot of times it's been manipulated by historians, and mm-hmm. or their work was attributed to their father or their husband or partner, whatever it happened to be. I can't really say too much what it is. It's something that would have to be seen, but it will be a lot of portraits. I've done about 70 already.
Wow.
And that's two portraits woven together and two pages from a biography of each one of these women. If there were written biographies, in some cases I've had to cull text from various sources and put them together in sort of a haphazard way. But to be able to digitally source this information on the internet is something, I mean, I couldn't have done this 20 years ago.
So have you written any of the text yourself?
No.
No.
I haven't. This is all sourced from historic sources. There is a place on the web where there are a lot of archived old books that even I didn't know of, because sometimes you can go to, well, let's say Google Books, and you can find biographies on Georgia O'Keeffe, let's say. But very hard to find something about Sofonisba Anguissola, who was an Italian painter from 1600s? I can't remember.
Yeah, I
Not
guess
very
so.
Good with the dates.
Yeah.
So I've had to cull a lot of this. But then I've woven it together. They'll be paired, but I'm hoping to do over 100. And the show is set for fall of 2017 at Station Gallery in Whitby. So I'm very excited
about
that.
I'll be there. That's for sure. Well, let's sort of cycle right back. We were talking about your new art project, but let's return to poetry for mm-hmm. a second, because you also have a brand new poetry book.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that.
Yes, I have a new book of poems out. I'm very excited about it. For me, poetry is about exploration. Things haunt me until I find out where they lead. And this collection is a number of things. The poems that I've been reading today are from the collection. And as I've said before, they're sparked by a number of things. It's about where we are from moment to moment, who we are from moment to moment, how the being of existing, it's never static. And it's interesting, too, because I don't like to theme things. I like people to explore the poems for themselves and make those connections for themselves. So I don't like to lead people too much. But it's interesting because I always think of Timothy Findlay said that every writer has tics. We have preoccupations, images that stick with us, and they come out, they surface in our writing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not aware of it, you're in the moment, you're writing away, you're somewhere else, and you don't see those things until someone else reads them. And my editor's very good at picking those things up, but I see them too when I put all the pages on the wall when I'm sorting things, and I definitely have my own. So landscape always comes into play, but also stories, family history, even politics to a degree. The book is called This Being.
Well, perhaps you could read a little more to us?
Yes, I'd like to. I have a few short poems here, and they're set a little closer to home. Staging an Ontario day. Freight trains tug the day east to west, a stubborn backdrop behind them. River runs its lines. Robins scurry between marks, while daylight dims and the wind prompts summer to its fall, a tragedy. Noon's brief walk on exits in morning's wake, and day changes costume on stage. Mist draws its curtain, and given the gravity of cues, the clouds capitulate with rain, a shower like applause. weathered eyes, as usual, will criticize each error in the prediction. Southbound out. Itching to hitch a ride at Caladar, the old guy's all gums and grin, a portrait no one's thought to paint. He hovers at the road's shoulder, thumb out, dusty, trying again. The cardinal splash of his cap and suspenders flag his intentions as sure as a sign would, and south is the only direction on his map. He blind-eyes the campers who tailwind the opposite way, leans instead into their turbulence, a middle distance he's set sight on, away from blueberries, marshes, the isolating fuss of visitors, and a fickleness that tricks them into thinking they are at one with this blasted nature. He's moving on before the hibernation sets in up here, where Earth's a skim coat on rock, roots creep varicose near the surface, and shadows in a slippage of daylight will soon enough recoil and disappear. Decoys. We sighted those leviathan pipes, huddled like monstrous decoys rusting up against Quinty's north shore, then suckered in, gunned the boat straight across the bay. Tugboats soon mustered them for the run up the lake to Toronto, welded end to end. Underwater they shaped a barrel sliding past the harbor mouth into the city's gullet. Old folk in town nearby mind the winters the water froze a mile out, and kids in wool mitts flocked onto the trick of liquid gone hard, transfixed by a show of ice volcanoes. On houses snugged in the hum of power plants, meters currently spin their dizzy compass, while steam bleeds around a sudden buckshot of ducks peppering the waves near the shore. October Ganaraska. The salmon stagger upstream, spill backward, yielding ground, their broken soldiers homing in on birth pools and one magnetic need. On the bridge, you and I lean further over the rail as if to coax them. Come on, we do it, we weather all the years, not glancing behind us, we just go on. The cold pulls at us on this anniversary day, urges us to abandon the creatures flagging on a riverbed of hazards, or burst open like hearts on life's rack. Love ratchets its grip, persistent as coming winter. Stupid, they nose onward. We turn and walk uphill into a headstrong outbound current.
Lovely. I love all the images in your work.
Thank you.
So many thanks to you, Ingrid. We've been talking with Ingrid Ruthick. Her new book, This Being, is out right now. Where can listeners buy copies of the book?
The usual online sources, independent bookstores. If they would like to visit my website at ingridruthick.com, I'll have links to things and other information. And the publisher is fitzhenry.ca.
Great. And to connect with us here at Word on the Hills, please send your comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs by going to our website, wordonthehills.com, and leave a comment there. Also at our website, you can find all our past broadcasts archived, so you can listen to them anywhere and anytime. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again for another program next week, right here on Word on the Hills, on Sunday and Thursday, Northumberland 897, truly local radio.